That is the sound of protesters in Mexico City this month demonstrating against government collusion with drug cartels, including the slaughter of 43 student protesters recently. Drug violence and drug culture are everywhere in Mexico. That's the band Los Tigres del Norte playing Contrabando y Traición, Contraband and Betrayal. In 1973, that was the first big hit in the Mexican pop musical genre called narcocorridos, songs that tell the stories of Mexico's drug traffickers. 40 years later, narcocorridos are everywhere in Mexico and on Spanish language radio in the United States. But in the meantime, the drug cartels the corridos glorify have become increasingly powerful and violent, the fact driving Mexican politics and life and culture. My guest today, Carolina Miranda, writes for the Los Angeles Times, including a recent article asking whether it might be time to shame and retire some of the gang outlaw music. Carolina Miranda, welcome back to Studio 360.
Thank you for having me, Kurt.
So how did narcocorridos start? This isn't a new phenomenon, right?
No. I mean, the whole idea of a ballad that tells a story is as old as Mexican music itself. And there's evidence of some of the first narcocorridos coming up in the 1930s when you had a song called For Morphine and Cocaine, and it was a story about cross-border smuggling between the U.S. and Mexico. So it's definitely not new. I think what is significant, what you have seen appear in the last few years are these extremely violent narcocorridos. Narcocorridos that don't tell necessarily these cinematic, poetic stories about smuggling the way Los Tigres do, but really focus on the violence. They're about chopping heads off. They're about killing. The singers carry bazookas. It is as hyper-violent as violence can get.
Here is a clip from one of the hyper-violent songs you're talking about. This is El Comander singing El Taquicardio, the rapid heartbeat, about the glories of the drug trade, and it's a current huge hit. I listened to that song for the first time last night, by the way, on Spotify. It's everywhere. And these more extreme corridos mostly come from a production team that's based in the United States, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a group called the Twins Group, and they're based in Burbank. But there is a lot of cross-border exchange. You know, they're reading these narco blogs. They sometimes take commissions from gangsters, from people who smuggle drugs.
Really? So they are not just showbiz people creating illusions. They are actually sometimes involved with the cartels?
Exactly. Some of the songwriters, I don't want to imply that everyone is doing this, but there is this very direct connection, and it's a culture that to some degree is being supported by the U.S. I mean, as you said, you can hear these songs on Spotify. You can also buy them at Walmart.
So upwards of 10,000 Mexicans a year are dying in these drug cartel wars. The impact on lives beyond that is incalculable. So why are these songs so popular?
Well, I think, you know, there's a little bit of the underdog, the outlaw rebel. I mean, you know, this is a figure we celebrate in our own culture if you think about, you know, Tony Soprano or Clint Eastwood in every
Bonnie
Western.
And Clyde, yeah. What's the difference between a narcocorrido by an alterado artist, as we call this new tendency, and gangster rap of the 1990s in the United States?
It's a good parallel. You know, the direct links, the fact that some of these songwriters do take commissions from the cartels probably sets it apart.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think NWA was taking commissions from from street gangs in LA at the time.
And also the ghetto drug dealers that were being arguably glorified and celebrated by that music did not control the American government at every level.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, one of the things that the students were protesting in Mexico was really this idea of the narco state, of narcos occupying every level of society. And I feel that, you know, this alterado culture, it almost has become propaganda for that state.
So what should happen, in your view, in your ideal world? The legitimate industries that are profiting from this thing should ratchet it back?
I think the music really, to some degree, is a symptom of a much larger problem, and the culture is a reflection of that. All of that said, you know, I'm also a journalist and a big believer in free speech. But at the same time, I think that we as consumers of culture can take a step back and think about what we're buying, what we're listening to, and what we're celebrating with every time, you know, we hit play on our iTunes.
Carolina Miranda, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
So, what do you think? Should Mexican artists and the entertainment industry draw some lines here? Does pop culture ever bear responsibility for inciting real-life violence? Tell us what you think at studio360.org.